You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Recent years have seen increased awareness of the issue of human trafficking, especially as it relates to women and children being forced into the sex trade.
But our next guest says it's critical to deal differently with those who are coerced into prostitution and those who chose to work in commercial sex, and that more people have chosen to be sex workers than we might think.
In addition, she says that keeping prostitution illegal makes it less safe for the women and men in the trade, and that the billions of dollars spent to arrest sex workers and their clients could be redirected to more serious criminal activities.
Joining us now is Allison Bath. She's an assistant professor of journalism at West Virginia University and was a longtime medical and science writer for the Boston Globe. Her most recent book is Getting Screwed, Sex Workers and the Law. Allison, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Well, we have a picture of a sex work of prostitution that has been front and center lately. I think that it's sex trafficking. It's human slavery. Most sex workers are coerced, maybe trafficked across state or international borders. You say that happens, but that's not the norm. That's not even the majority.
That's right. Most of the men and women who are doing sex work today are in it by choice. They are doing it for economic reasons, to pay their way through school, pay down student loans, have the flexibility to raise families. For instance, there's a study that was done by the Urban Justice Institute in New York that found that only 16% of the people doing sex work in New York City say they got into it by being trafficked or coerced into it.
Let's talk about law enforcement then. You make the case, this is one of the key points of your book, that the way we enforce prostitution laws in this country makes sex workers less safe, considerably less safe than if it were decriminalized. Can you make that case?
Well, basically, what happens when sex work is illegal, violent predators can operate with impunity and prey on both sex workers and women who are not sex workers. Sex workers are like canaries in the coal mine when it comes to violent predators, but because they often see them first, men who rape and kill women. But because they are afraid of being arrested, they don't go to the police because they are afraid they're going to get arrested themselves. So these serial killers and other violent predators can operate with impunity. So you see, for instance, with the case of Gary Ridgway, the infamous Green River killer, who was accused of killing upwards of 49 women in the Washington State area. Several sex workers knew that he was the killer. They'd either survived or they'd heard about it. And they were either afraid to go to the police, or when a few did go to the police, they were ignored and not listened to. So he went on and killed others. And as I said before, when these kind of violent predators are allowed to operate with impunity in the community, non-prostitutes are killed as well.
And apart from that worst case, really, the serial killer, you write that sex workers, prostitutes, are in danger sometimes from their clients, sometimes from corrupt police officers. How does that play out in a criminalized world of prostitution?
Well, unfortunately, like every profession, there are a few bad apples, and sometimes there have been cases where police have insisted on free sex in exchange for not arresting a sex worker. It happens more than we'd like to believe. And in other cases, I tell the story of Jennifer Reed, who was a young single mother working as an erotic dancer in Ohio, and a corrupt police officer pressured her for sex, and when she refused to give him free sex, he harassed her and her family and made life very difficult for them. So bad laws lead to bad cops, and unfortunately, if it were decriminalized, sex workers would be much more feel more comfortable going to police and working with them to report either abusive pimps, violent clients, or killers.
We're talking to Allison Bass about her new book. It's called Getting Screwed, Sex Workers and the Law. Let's get into this concept of decriminalization. Amnesty International, their international branch, recommended to their national branches that this could be an issue for them, should be an issue for them. Feels like, I thought, a fresh new argument, but actually in your book you write, we had this debate in the 70s, not the 1970s, the 1870s.
Oh, that's correct. The American Medical Association came out in favor of decriminalizing and regulating sex work from a public health and public safety standpoint. So what happens is when in countries where sex work has been decriminalized and regulated, sex workers have more time to negotiate safe sex, i.e. sex with condoms. And in places where it is illegal, often those transactions are rushed. So in countries where sex work has been legalized, like the Netherlands and New Zealand, there are very low rates of HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases. And in fact, in Rhode Island, which for 30 years, because of a loophole in the law, indoor sex work was permissible, incidence of rape and sexually transmitted diseases went down in that state.
But a lot of people look at this issue, and this is from feminists maybe on the left to religious conservatives on the right, and say there's something inherently exploitative, degrading about the exchange of money for sexual acts. Is there something to that?
Well, I'm sure for some people sex work is degrading, but for many of the men and women who do it, they find it empowering. They like what they do. And what happens when there's been entrenched attitudes against prostitution for centuries, and it comes out of this idea that we have to venerate marriage and make it somehow different from the institution, an institution which resembles it, which is sex work. If you think about it, marriage is an implicit exchange. You get sex in return for certain things, and sex work is a more explicit exchange. So for centuries, church groups needed to put marriage on a pedestal because that was where you had reproduction and offspring, and they needed to vilify sex work. And you add to that the layer of sexism in that women are not supposed to enjoy sex with multiple partners, and you have these entrenched attitudes about sex work. If you think about it, there are almost as many male sex workers in this country as there are female sex workers, and yet female sex workers are 4 to 5 times more likely to get arrested.
I want to look at a couple of international models, different ways of dealing with enforcement. One attitude, and I've seen this some in the United States, is, all right, we're not going to arrest the sex workers themselves. We're going to go after the clients, arrest the Johns, put the impetus on them. And I think Sweden, you write, is one country that's done that. You're not a fan of that approach. Why not?
No, because that actually makes working conditions much more dangerous for sex workers. And it has not curbed the number of women doing sex work, nor has it led to a decline in sex trafficking in that region. All it does is because clients are afraid of getting arrested, they rush the transaction. And again, sex workers can't negotiate safe sex, and they are forced into more hidden, isolated spaces. So since Sweden passed this law, it's actually become more dangerous for sex workers to operate.
A country you offer as a more positive example is New Zealand. Can you talk about how they have changed things there?
Well, in 2003, they decriminalized laws against adult prostitution, leaving in place laws against child prostitution and trafficking. And at the same time, they regulate venues where sex work happens, like brothels, massage parlors, spas. They regulate them like any other business, so they're licensed, and they are inspected regularly. So if, when the inspector goes in, if they find that there are labor abuses, labor exploitation, or that there's, for instance, an illegal immigrant that's being employed in one of the brothels, they can shut them down. So the local municipalities regulate these places and determine where they're going to be and how many they want. So they may not want them near playgrounds and schools. But at the same token, they don't require sex workers to register with the state, because there is still so much social stigma to doing sex work that would just push men and women into the illegal sector. So they regulate the facilitators of prostitution, and it has worked very well in improving working conditions and reducing violence against all women and also reducing the spread of HIV.
We're talking with Allison Bass about her new book. It's called Getting Screwed, Sex Workers and the Law.
And we want to hear from you. Would you support decriminalization of prostitution? Have you or has someone you know worked in the sex industry? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post a question or comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Allison Bass. She's the author of the book Getting Screwed, Sex Workers and the Law.
And we want to hear from you. Do you think that the resources spent on arresting prostitutes or their customers is the right priority? If not, where would you rather see the money and time spent? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post a question or a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller now. We've got Judith on the line in Wausau. Judith, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would say that I'm actually in favor of legitimizing prostitution, and I definitely think it would perhaps do a lot to diminish the sexual slavery aspect. But I had really called for a point of information from Ms. Bass, if I could. And that is, when she talks about the near 50-50 split between female sex workers and male sex workers, I am curious to know, the male sex workers, are their customers predominantly women or men?
Judith, thanks for the call. And you do get into that in your book, Allison.
Yes, they're predominantly men. I'm talking about gay escorts who serve male gays. Population, and there are many of them because there are many men who haven't been able to come out of the closet and have their sexual needs met, so they turn to gay escorts, and there are many of them operating throughout the country. And when you try to close down sites like websites like Rent Boy, as law enforcement did recently, you just make it more difficult for sex workers to operate safely. You force the lower end of the scale out onto the street, which is a much more dangerous venue in which to operate to sell sex.
Judith, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And you write about the gay male escorts themselves. Oftentimes, their family might not accept their sexual orientation, or they can't come out to the family. Often they're runaways, and they don't have a lot of other options, as I understand it.
That's right. Both teenage runaways, both girls and boys, often they're running away from homes where they've been molested and abused themselves, or they're lesbian and gay, and they haven't been made to feel welcome, and they're running away from very unpleasant home situations, and they're selling sex for survival on the streets. What these young men and women need are not getting arrested and re-traumatized by the criminal justice system. What they need, and where we should be putting our resources, is into social services, into education, housing, support, and counseling for these young people so that they can choose to practice a different lifestyle.
Seems like part of what you're trying to do in your book is to complicate our image of who is doing sex work in this country. Legally, we take it sounds like a one-size-fits-all approach.
That's very true. There are many, a growing number of middle-class men and women who are doing sex work, as I said before, for economic reasons, to pay their way through school, pay off expensive student loans, and raise families. One male escort I met at a conference, Legendary Dave, was a single parent who was raising a child, and he was an escort, and he did what we call out calls. He met his clients in another apartment and kept it separate from his home life, but this is a way that he could raise his child, and his child is now in college, and Dave is considering retiring.
Talking to Allison Bass, author of the book Getting Screwed, Sex Workers and the Law. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Should prostitution be decriminalized? Why or why not? 800-642-1234. Allison, I started off the interview talking about sex trafficking, especially maybe of underage girls and boys, I suppose. It's not, you say, the majority of sex work in the United States, but it does exist. What would be the right legal approach to solving that?
Well, what does exist are, again, these teenage runaways who are largely operating in their own communities. So the the word trafficking is a very confusing name because they're not being transported across borders for sex work. They are often operating in their own homes. See, by definition, anybody under the age of 18 is considered a trafficking victim, even though they may not consider themselves as such. The other problem with the push towards sex trafficking is that, again, the majority of illegal immigrants who do sex work in this country are not being forced or coerced into it. They are doing it by choice. However, there are some that are doing that are trafficked in terms of illegal immigrants. And as I said before, what we need are we need to put the money for the teenage runaways into social services to help them with education, housing, so they don't have to sell sex for survival on the streets, okay? So they can get out of the sway of abusive pimps, although the majority of them are not under the sway of abusive pimps, according to a big study that was done in New York City. As far as women who are being trafficked, they need to have social services as well. What happens is that they're not supposed to be arrested and they're not supposed to be deported, but they are routinely deported, so very few of them are going to go to the police and say, look, I'm being trafficked, because they don't want to be deported. So the problem is that the way our law enforcement is enforcing laws is actually exacerbating the situation and pushing true victims of trafficking further underground.
You, as part of your research for this book, talked to a number of women who are working as sex workers, and it sounds like, as you mentioned, a lot of them do it in lean times, and eventually they move on and get married or get other jobs outside of sex work. Is that a pretty common life story?
That's right. A lot of young women who do sex work may go into it for economic reasons for a few years. For instance, I talked to Anna, who worked in one of the legal brothels in Nevada. Nevada is the only state in the nation that currently allows some form of legal prostitution in brothels located in its rural counties. And Anna had lost her job. She's married, and she lost her job during the Great Recession. And so she decided to work for a brothel with her husband's complete support. She had expensive student loans to pay down. So she worked in the brothel for 4 years, paid down her student loans, and put her husband through graduate school. And she is now no longer working in the brothel. They're back in Florida, where she is raising a family, and her husband is working.
We'll go back to our callers. We've got Ann on the line in Madison. Ann, hi.
Hi. I think that I'm somewhat repeating a previous caller's, or that somehow the author has already spoken to this. But as a psychotherapist, I am just aware that this business of the people are doing it by choice is not completely true. At least in many circumstances, the people have been abused as children and have this attitude that I'm going to get pushed around sexually. So if I can take command of it and get something out of it myself, all the better. It comes from an attitude of resignation almost.
And thanks for that call. Did you find that people who were in sex work had been sexually abused, Allison?
Well, among street workers, yes, there's a greater percentage of women who've been sexually abused as children. But among higher class or higher end escorts who are doing indoor sex work, there wasn't a greater percentage who have been abused as children.
And thanks for that call. You're making the case in your book for decriminalization of sex work in the United States and elsewhere. Do you see this being something that the politicians, the legislators who would have to sign off on this could get behind?
Well, I think it's going to be an uphill battle. But if you look at who would have thought that we would be legalizing marijuana and same-sex marriage 15 or 20 years ago. So I'm hoping that eventually we'll be able to change attitudes and show people the public health benefits of decriminalizing sex work. I realize it'll be an uphill battle. But recently, a Washington, D.C. city councilman, David Grosso, called for the decriminalization of sex work in that city because of the public health reasons.
Allison, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Allison Bass. She's an assistant professor of journalism at West Virginia University, previously a longtime journalist. We've been talking about her most recent book. It's called Getting Screwed, Sex Workers and the Law. You can still share your thoughts on the conversation, your opinions, and the idea of decriminalizing sex work, prostitution. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page and let us know what you think.